Spirit Radio Podcasts.
My next guest has been for decades one of Ireland's leading columnists, and since leaving the Irish Times in 2014, he's been much sought after, especially outside Ireland, in different publications such as First Things in the United States, and he's working on a number of books as well. He was with me in studio in November when we talked about a tour he was just about to embark on around the country called Crisis of Democracy in Ireland. So we're going to be hearing about how that tour has been going and just the reaction and response from people who've been turning up to these events. In this week's First Things, his article is about Ireland's constitutional crisis, and he describes the upcoming referendum on abortion as a moment unprecedented in human history. In studio to tell us more, we have journalist John Waters. Good morning, John. How are you?
Morning, Wendy. Good.
Let's start off with that article. Why do you think that we have a constitutional crisis in Ireland at the moment?
Well, we have a constitutional crisis because we are now at the point, having nibbled away at our constitution for some years in different ways with relation to family and different other aspects, parenting, we're now at the point where we're actually about to address the most fundamental right of all, which is the right to life. We're actually going to start encroaching on that if this process that we're about to embark on ends in a particular place. It will mean, and that's what I mean by it being unprecedented in human history, if we were, God forbid that we would, but if we were to actually vote to repeal Article 40.3.3, this would be the first time in human history that a people, an electorate, had voted for the annihilation of a section of its number. This never happened before.
Because in other jurisdictions it's been brought in by the legislature.
Well, under the category of abortion, yes. The United States, it was Roe versus Wade, it was a court decision. In the United Kingdom, for example, it was a statutory instrument legislated for by the government of the day. This will be the people complicit in something which amounts to a license to kill, extending a license to kill through the government to franchise interests. This is absolutely unbelievable. And this is a category of human person which will be targeted, the most innocent, the most defenceless category of all. We will have voted for it if we do. And there will be no hiding place from that, ever.
The Taoiseach,
not even the Nazis.
The Taoiseach Leo Varadkar says abortion has no place in our constitution.
But it actually isn't in our constitution. You see, this is the thing. This is the level of ignorance. This is pandering to ignorance. This is Leo Varadkar talking to people, assuming they know nothing. And he's probably right most of the time, with young people in particular. They are totally uneducated about these things. Article 43.3 does not contain the word abortion. It has no relevance to abortion other than that abortion is prevented as a result of it. There are lots of things that are prevented from things in the Constitution and for good reasons. This is the assertion, acknowledgement of a fundamental right. And this is a very important point. And this is almost the core of what we have been trying to do, what I've been trying to do for the last few months now, is alert people to this very, very salient fact that Article 43.3 does not, as it were, raise up the right to life of the child in the womb. It doesn't initiate that right. That right is antecedent. It precedes the Constitution. It was always there. It will always be there. Our voting it down in de jure and in theory does nothing if we do vote it down. But the problem is that we have now a culture which is what is called positivist, which is the idea that law is all man-made and that there are no such thing as given, antecedent, fundamental and absolute laws. Therefore, we're in a situation where a verdict by the people striking down Article 43.3 would be interpreted by our courts as voiding the right of the child in the womb. Can I give you a phrase here, Wendy? This is I'm trying to get myself out of, since I reread the Constitution and reread the Irish version, I've been trying to get myself out of even using constructions like the unborn and even the child in the womb. There's a beautiful phrase in the Irish, na mio gombre, the living without birth. This is what we're striking down, the rights of the living without birth to that birth, to that life. Now, this is unprecedented. Let's take away all the victimologies and all the propaganda and all the other noise that we're hearing and focus for a moment, which we never do anymore in this culture generally, and focus on this figure, this baby, in that place, the most vulnerable place of all. And it is incumbent on us, that baby, it is being talked about as if the baby had a duty or owed a debt to the mother or owed a debt to the society. The baby owes no debts to anybody. We owe debts to the baby. We are the society. The mother owes debts. The father owes debts. There is no debt coming the other direction. And yet all the discussion, as if this baby was some kind of imposition on the mother. We are absent leadership on this. If we continue the way we are going with the kind of leaders we have, they will lead us into chaos beyond our wildest nightmares. Because this is the beginning of something very, very dark. That if you can actually breach the very idea that the rights to life that we have, that we take for granted, do not come from us from somewhere beyond. Whether you believe in God or not is not that relevant. What is relevant is that the right to life is not mine by concession of the state. It is not mine by consensus of the population, of the electorate. It is not mine by permission of anybody. It is mine because it is mine. Because I am alive, I am a person with given dignity, given life. Once we begin to lose sight of that idea, we're on the road to where other nations have ended up for different reasons in the past. And that's a very, very dark place.
What about, John, the argument that people say, look, the Irish Constitution was written at a very different time and Ireland has changed a lot and our Constitution has to reflect those changes.
What does it mean to change? Is there such a thing as change for the bad? Can we consider that possibility? Is it that this is some kind of naturalistic process, an evolutionary process, that the killing of children is part of evolution? Is that what they're telling us? That striking down the most vulnerable and innocent and defenseless of all is a symptom of evolution, of man's progress? Give me a break. This is disgusting. It is disgusting.
Tell me a little bit about the experience that you've had so far on the crisis of democracy in Ireland tour. I remember when we last spoke, John, you said, I could tell you about it, but it's hard to talk about specifically where we're going to be because you were worried that you were going to be shut down because of the things that you might be talking about. How have things been going and what sort of reaction have you been getting from those who have been turning?
Well, the fear was legitimate in that there were early signs that some people were trying to sabotage our meetings and going online, trying to block book seats and so on and so on. I mean, we are dealing with a riffraff in this referendum that originated in the last referendum, which is like unprecedented in Irish life, which has been tolerated because people are scared of them and afraid to tackle them or speak out against them. But they have no scruples whatsoever. But we did our tour and we went to before Christmas to 10 towns, cities around Ireland, starting in Wexford, and we went round to Cork. We were in Limerick, Galway. We had been in Sligo before that, in Waterford. We did in Dublin. We were in the National Library in Dublin, of all places. And so we had a really interesting... Our effort, we call it the crisis in democracy, not as a camouflage, but as an attempt to show people that this is not... ipso facto and primarily a matter of Catholic doctrine. That's not where it begins. Catholic doctrine reflects something more fundamental, if you like, Christian doctrine. I say in my First Things article, all these things would be true even if Christ had never come. And they would. So, yes, Christianity, because it is what it is, and because Christ was who he was, has co-opted all of these things onto itself and expanded them and explained them and elaborated and makes us richer in our understandings of why they are the way they are. But these ideas are there from the very beginning. They had to be, or mankind would never have survived to this far. And these are the ideas, and that the Irish Constitution reflects this in great depth. And going back to your earlier question, I mean, this idea, I used to hear disc jockeys over the years, disc jockeys in particular, for some reason, when I'd be driving around in my car talking about the Constitution in these terms, saying, oh, it's out of date now, And it often occurred to me, well, how often, would we need to renew the Constitution if that were the case? Should we really go at it every month or every week or maybe even a different Constitution every day? If time is moving, if things are changing so much, it's an absurd idea. The ideas in the Constitution are timeless ideas. for the most part, they are the most fundamental understandings of man in the world. And for us to decide that, you know, because of the whims or the technologies of a particular moment, that things had fundamentally changed, that it was okay to see. You see, this is about propaganda.
When you say propaganda, John, are you talking about how, in general, media reports on specific issues? Is it how journalism has changed? I mean, what is the kind of driving force behind this?
Well, propaganda is a much faceted thing. You know, I mean, it's everything. It's a saturation in all kinds of forms, formats, and so on in of a society on a single idea. But the media has become a cooperative to that. I mean, we don't have, to be honest, in terms of the mainstream media, I mean the mainstream newspapers, the national broadcasters, so-called, you know, all these other news radio stations, apart from you know, the occasional station like Spirit, which has a different understanding of things. But the rest is really, they're no longer involved in journalism. They're involved in propaganda generally.
Why? What's the driving force, do you think?
It's very interesting. It's a cultural force which arises. I think the big factor is the change in the way that journalists are recruited, have been in the last 20 years in particular. When I went into journalism, I came in through hot press. I came in, you know, coming up from the country, not having had any particular training in journalism. And I came in that way. That doesn't really happen anymore. It's all now going to a certain handful of colleges and a handful of professors of journalism who all have the same ideologies. They're essentially cultural Marxists who are imposing this ideology on all of their students, who come out thinking that's the function of journalism, to preach these ideas in whatever medium they're fortunate to get a job.
Do you think I was watching the film The Post last night, John, and that was one of the things, it made me sad. I was chatting earlier about just how things have changed, and these journalists that were willing to go to prison, put everything that they had on the line to report the truth, to do their job as journalists, which is to hold those who were guilty to account and to serve the people. I feel like that doesn't really happen too
much anymore.
It
doesn't happen anymore. It's finished. They serve a T-shirt. They serve a slogan, repeal. Repeal is a reduction of something tremendous. You know, they don't even know what's in the so-called Eighth Amendment. They don't know what Article 40.3.3 is about. But the word repeal, it's like a Pavlovian trigger now. These people become hysterical under the attrition of this word. Like the way, I remember years ago when we were children, the hypnotist Paul Golden used to sometimes come on the Late Late Show, and he would pluck a few people from the audience and he would hypnotise them, and he would use a word. And then by the use of this word, it could be rhubarb, it could be leprechaun, they would be running round the place searching for fairies and pixies and so on. And when they would click his fingers or repeat this word, they would return to normal and have no memory. This is what's happening. And it's not just happening to young people, it's happening to old people. This is terrifying, where you find people who, you know, by their visage or by their appearance, you would say that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, these people would have been among the most sober and thoughtful people in our society. They're now talking absolute gibberish because they're listening to RTE every day, all day, and this, and all night sometimes, because the poor people can't sleep, and they're repeating those awful programs all through the night. And these people are absolutely hypnotized with this gibberish and are unable to get out of this. And they're unable, in this context, to see in this picture that has been presented to them, the dark corner. Because in that dark corner, there is somebody. And that somebody is a little child who has no voice except mine and yours. And those of us who are willing to stand up against this tyranny in order to ensure that we do not shame ourselves for all time in history before the world. Because I can tell you this, Wendy. We think now, this dynamic of progress that we keep talking about, that this it vindicates us. No, this is completely false. This idea that it's okay to kill in this way, because killing is what it is a trick, a sleight of hand of propaganda and of technology, because the technology makes it invisible. It sanitizes it. It removes us from sight. It's not like, you know, a murder in the street. But it is a murder. And one time, you know, with advancing technologies, you know, that we see this with the ultrasounds and so on now, the way the abortion stats have gone down in the United States, the more and more sophisticated the ultrasound technology has become, the lower the less, the fewer abortions that you get. In time, history will wake up. And we will look back on this as an appalling, incomprehensible time. Just as we look back now at the Nazi period and wonder, how did these people, how did the German people allow this to happen? We will ask the same of ourselves. Unless we actually stop at this moment to think one last time before we plunge into that abyss.
So that is the question you, I'm sure, are posing throughout your Crisis of Democracy in Ireland tour. Have you further dates coming up, John?
Yeah, we have. We have two coming up in February. I think the 15th in Cavan and the 16th in Donegal. But we have a Crisis of Democracy website. All the details, up-to-date details, are on that. And it's updated all the time. And there are videos on there of the previous meetings and some articles, including my First Things article, which kind of summarizes the whole thing to a pretty good extent, I think.
Great stuff. You can get all the details on facebook.com/ Crisis of Democracy Ireland. John Waters, thanks for joining us
on
Spirit Radio.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.